agenda item is multi-species committee report, and I'll turn that over to Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The multi-species groundfish committee materials are behind tab number 3. Most of what we have today is an update on Amendment 16. The most important documents, which we will get to in a little bit, are 2 through 5, which are the operations plan for the Georges Bank hook gear and fixed gear sector operation plan. Since the last council meeting, the Groundfish PDT met discussing Amendment 16, the Amendment 16 alternatives that we're working on. The committee itself has not met since the last council meeting. The committee plans to meet on the 20th of April, and that'll be the day after the Groundfish AP will meet on the 19th. Both of those meetings will be held up at the Holiday Inn in Peabody. And we have scheduled one additional committee meeting on the 31st of May, again, hopefully to be able to bring to the council at the June meeting a set of alternatives or measures that we would like to have further developed for Amendment 16. One of the things that did go on since the last meeting, the Gulf of Maine Research Institute and the Mass Fisheries Institute held a workshop up at UNH. It was a 2-day workshop in which they got the proponents for the area management and the proponents for the point system together with some of the interested parties. Some people from the service came. There were some council members who attended as interested individuals, because this was outside of the council process. But it was 2 days of what I thought was a very good exchange of information. Gave a lot of good feedback, I believe, to the proponents on the issues that people saw with the measures the way they were had been proposed. So that's essentially where we are at the moment with Amendment 16. We are looking forward to the next council meeting as being a time where we're going to have to make some very hard decisions on what goes forward in this amendment. The main council action that we have today is essentially, I believe it's commenting on the Georges Bank cod hook sector and fixed gear sector operations plans. And Tom has a short presentation discussion on some of those items.
Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Nelson.
I had a question on the earlier comment that Rip had made as far as the presentation that was made up at UNH. I got some feedback from that in that there was a concern that only 2 proposals were evaluated or aired at that particular session, and that others who had felt that they were proposals that had been put forward by the council for consideration were not included in that, and therefore are they being shunted to the side? And that's kind of a perception item that's out there. If 2 proposals are aired, vetted, and improved upon by a conference, are they going to have a problem with others being able to be given a fair? Are the others are going to be able to have a fair hearing, if you will, or fleshing out? And so I think that's that was a concern that was raised. It's a perception that's existing, and I just wanted to see if there was any response to that.
Well, there is a response. First of all, as I indicated and probably didn't indicate strongly enough, that this workshop was not a council function. It was put together by GMRI and MFI, and they were the ones who made the selection of what was going to be discussed at that. So if there were measures that were left out, that, you know, I don't want to answer for them as to exactly why they did that. But my understanding was that they were also talking about the possibility of having a second workshop to discuss essentially all of the other alternatives. And again, you'd have to check with them to see what their scheduling is and when they're going to do that. And, you know, I think there were, again, the council members that attended that and the staff people did so as interested parties that had no council function.
Any other questions or comments before I move into the next agenda item? Vito?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to John's question, wanted to bring up the days at sea. We're hoping that there will be more work done through the council as well as, I can't speak for GMRI or MFI, but they did indicate that they wanted to have a focused workshop on anything that has to do with modifying the existing days at sea system. We had indicated in the beginning that December 29th was the due date for new management concepts to come forward, and that modifying the days at sea system was something that was still an ongoing thing. There's no deadline for that. So we just wanted to say we're definitely interested in putting forward ideas. We didn't want to bog down the December 29th process, but I think there are a lot of people that want to try to improve the day at sea system through some deliberate process, as opposed to just being stuck with what was submitted in the 29th.
Thank you, Vito. Anyone else? Okay. Rip.
Good morning. Just to review the process for sectors, the way Amendment 13 established the sectors and the way it was implemented is each year the sector submits an operating plan and an environmental assessment to the National Marine Fisheries Service for review and approval. The operating plan usually includes their harvesting rules. The Fisheries Service works with the sectors on the environmental assessment, and then when it meets their standards, they issue a notice in the Federal Register and ask for public comment on the EA and the proposed operating plan. After considering the comment, NIMS then either approves the plan or approves it, in part, depending on exactly what's proposed. This year, the two sectors we have, the fixed gear sector and the hook sector, have submitted their proposals to the service. The service has prepared the Federal Register notice. As of a day or two ago, the actual FR notice had not yet been published. I don't know if it was published today or not. Last year, we ran into a little bit of a problem with the sectors in that the operating plans were not distributed in time for the council to consider them at a council meeting. There were some suggested changes that the council chairman thought the council might want to weigh in on, so we actually asked NIMS to not approve those particular changes till after the June council meeting when we talked about it. To try and avoid the same type of delay, this year we went to the sectors themselves since we heard the FR wouldn't be published before this meeting, and they have provided copies of their environmental assessment and operating plan so that the council can consider now whether they want to make any comments, and as soon as the FR notice comes out, if you choose to make some, we can then mail them over to the service, and we won't have to wait for the June council meeting. Just a quick summary of the two sectors. You have the operating plans in there. The Cape Cod hook sectors is item number 3 under groundfish. I'm not going to go over these in any detail. And the fixed gear sector is item number 5 under groundfish. Both of these sectors still use a combination of hard tack for George's Bank cod and days at sea to control fishing mortality. They have another of other harvesting rules. There's roughly and I may not have the count exactly right, but in the hook sector, I think there's roughly 34 owners and about 37 vessels. In the fixed gear sector, there's, I believe, 11 owners and 19 vessels. Those numbers are approximate. The two operating plans are very similar. There's some minor wording differences between the two, and obviously there's some different harvesting rules because the fixed gear sector uses gill nets and the hook sector does not. They are also very similar, if not nearly identical, to the operating plans that the council approved last year. There's only one point that I'll point out, and it's only in the hook sector, and I think it's actually a holdover from the initial year of operation. They have kind of an odd thing in the back, the very last section, page C3, where they talk about prorating of days at sea and landings. If you read this provision, it sounds like they're trying to create a way that they can fish before the sector is implemented or approved for the year, which, of course, conflicts with the regulations and actually conflicts with an earlier section in the document where it says you can't fish before implementation. Having talked with John, this was really designed for the first year of operation when they had an experimental fishing program going on for the hook sector in closed area one, I believe, and they wanted to allow that experiment to continue after the start of the fishing year before the sector was actually approved. So it's really not necessarily applicable to this year. I just pointed out because it is still in the document. But as I said, these are nearly identical. There are really no issues that are that I could see that really need to be of concern. They're almost identical to what was prepared, what was approved by the council last year. I said approved. That's really not correct. The council doesn't approve or disapprove these. The council just submits comments on these operating plans. So these are nearly identical to the operating plans that were submitted last year.
Paul. Tom, is there any requirement, and should there be any, since sectors are new, to have the service or someone give a review at the end of the year? How did the sector perform? Did it meet its goals? Did it report on time? Were there enforcement issues? Who looks at the performance? Does the council get any review of that?
Well, the sectors are supposed to submit a report after their fishing year within a certain number of days to the Fisheries Service. That report is supposed to include landings and discards of the species they caught. Both of the operating plans address the landings and discards issue in one way or another this year. I don't know, you know, what level of scrutiny the service gives the sector other than reviewing the report.
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, my question, I guess, is similar to Paul's. I can't tell anything from the operations plans about, for example, whether fisheries effort might have been shifted to species that aren't included in the operations plan. I think somebody should be reviewing that, you know, if effort is increased on other species because one species is fixed. This was a concern of mine last year, especially with the gillnet one, that there could be a massive shift in effort to other species. And, since we don't have it, we can't review it, but I hope that somebody does.
I mean, some of that information might be available in the environmental assessments, which summarize catches by the sectors. So, you might be able to take a look at that before the annual report is received, and look at the information in there and draw your own conclusions about whether our effort is shifted or not.
Yeah, if I could just say, having written two annual reports and about to start my third, the requirement is to submit the annual report within 60 days of the end of the fishing year. In both years, I believe I've not only given it to the service but also transmitted it to the council as well. But I'd be happy to provide those reports And I'm just thinking out loud that perhaps as part of the sector omnibus committee review process, we may actually recommend that on an annual basis when you submit your upcoming year's harvest plan and all the other documents that you include a copy of the most recent annual report as a way to reference the performance over the past year. Anyone else? Jimmy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom, I'm curious, you've dealt with this, I'm sure, since its inception. In your opinion, is there a need for a document as detailed as an EA on an annual basis? Or is that, I recognize that it's a requirement, but, you know, where sectors are new to everybody and everyone wanted to make sure that they were covered, I'm wondering about future sectors and other fisheries, if it's going to be as need would be as detailed.
Well, one question, I guess, in my mind is whether we really need the sector to submit an operating plan every year if they're not really making any changes. They probably have to at least submit their vessels that are going to operate with them each year because that determines how much fish they get, and that number may change from year to year as people join or drop out of the sector. But I don't know if it really serves a useful purpose to get an operating plan every year that is, you know, essentially identical to the one that the service reviewed and approved the previous year. I leave it to the service whether they think they need an EA every year or whether they only need an environmental assessment if they're reviewing an operating plan.
I agree with Tom that that's something we need to look at least a couple of things that we need to look at. One is if there's no changes, whether we need to go through the entire process every year. And then the other option is doing multiple-year operating plans or something like that. So I think that, you know, the council was trying to be very careful in this first sector, but now that we've had some experience, we could revisit the requirements and see if there's not an easier way to do this for everyone.
Anyone else? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Okay, Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have no motions to make on this, and so that concludes the groundfish report. Or multi-species groundfish, I should say.
Dave Gaethel, then Dave Pierce.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I have an issue, and I don't know whether to bring it up under groundfish or enforcement. It's an issue relative to Framework 42 as far as language goes, but it's an enforcement issue because it concerns VMS. I don't know where you'd like to deal with it.
Well, not knowing exactly what the issue is, I'm kind of in a pickle to decide where the appropriate place to have the discussion.
Okay, well, the issue is the March 7th permit holder letter that we received that requires declaring into the fishery on a daily basis. And it appears to be a result of language that was included in Framework 42.
We're done with the groundfish. Why don't you bring it up now, Dave?
Okay. I have a motion I'm prepared to offer. I'll describe the issue first. The issue is that since the implementation of the VMS requirement, NMFS has been using what they call a legacy code, which means once you're declared into a fishery that the system just uses that code until it receives another one. Fishermen received a letter on March 7th that says effective on April 1st, you will have to declare into a fishery every time you go fishing. So if you're a groundfish boat, you have to declare every day. If you're a lobster boat and you have a lobster, you have a groundfish permit, you're going to have to declare out of the fishery every day. Very burdensome requirement. And the issues are, first of all, these systems are run by a computer. Now, on larger vessels that have heat or dockside power, that computer is either left running or you know, there's heat in the wheelhouse so you can turn the computer on when you want to leave. On small vessels that are on moorings, which is most of the fleet from by numbers, is an example. My boat, when it's 5 below 0 out, it's 5 below 0 in the wheelhouse. And for any of you who own a computer, stick it in your icebox, leave it there overnight, get it out in the morning, and hit the on button and see what happens. Usually it won't do anything. If it does something, it usually says, call Bill Gates at once. You know, I've called Bill Gates a lot of times. He never calls me back. I can't quite figure that out. So it's undoable, basically. The second issue is time. Bill Semero provided me with the 12 declarations that I've made since I've had a VMS. And this is only the time it takes the declaration to get to the vendor. It's not the time it takes to come back to me. But they've been as long as 46 minutes. And again, when it's 5 below 0, I don't really want to be sitting around for... I had one of them that took 4 hours. That's probably the one that took 46 minutes to get there. Then it took about 3 hours and something to come back. You know, for a day boat, this becomes impractical and very rapidly. Third issue is cost. We got to pay for sending these annual declarations. You know, that's a burden. But that's a relatively minor burden compared to the rest of it. And apparently the issue results, I asked Tom graciously provided me with some information on how we voted on Framework 42. And without spending a real lot of time on it, to say the least, it was ambiguous as to how we got here. It appears to be a result of voting for the differential counting. We did have a separate motion on VMS that was tabled. We did vote to include VMS, but we never voted on the specific provisions of what the plan would look like. Apparently, it came from the vote on using differential counting. So with all that as background, I'm going to give Karen a motion so she can get it up on the board.
Hey, Dave, before you do that, I know the enforcement committee met, I think it was on Monday. Do you know if they dealt with this issue, or anyone on the committee, do you know if you dealt with this issue?
They talked about it, but they ultimately decided that it was a groundfish issue because it required a change in the text. They were sympathetic, but they didn't feel that they could deal with it.
Okay. Phil?
I agree with Dave. We talked about it quite a bit that day, but ultimately don't really know how to go about it, and I spoke to the RA earlier because it's a change, if I understand it right, to the existing regulation, but that existing regulation actually goes across all of the VMS plans, I mean, requirements. It's very unclear where you have to, what you're going to actually have to do to remedy this. I don't know that you can do it in the groundfish plan or the scallop plan, or it has to go across all the plans, or that's, it gets a little muddy right here, and that's where we figured to bring it right to the council.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a decision was made to require this, and there must be some rationale as to why it was put into place, so I wonder if the service would want to speak to that.
Well, did not originate in Framework 42. This actually goes back to Amendment 13, and it was the requirement for people in the U.S.-Canada area. And so it was, you know, for the same reason that it was put in place there, it was put in place for other areas as well as for the scallop fishery. And the, unfortunately, we weren't enforcing it early on, although it's been a requirement. And the reason that we started is because we've got so much misreporting right now. And, you know, our belief is that it's – our hope was that it was people misunderstanding because it's very complex and it can be hard to follow all of the codes and all the requirements. But frankly, as time has passed, it's clearer to us that it's not just a situation of people misunderstanding. It's a situation where people are trying to circumvent the requirements. So from our perspective, for us, for this to be usable, for this to make any sense, we need to be getting accurate declarations for every trip so that we know what people shouldn't be doing and so that they know what they should and shouldn't be doing.
Anyone else on the council? John?
Well, first off, if Dave's got is actually making the motion, then I'll be happy to second it so we can have the discussion, Mr. Chairman. I guess part of the discussion, since that's now done, is if we find something, Pat's outlined why it's needed, and you know I think we all recognize that you know that they need to get information so that they can do the job correctly. If we're finding out that there's a seasonality issue, i.e., cold weather and the electronics aren't going to work appropriately, we ought to just recognize that and see if there's some other way of dealing with it so that she can get the information or the service can get the information that they need and the fishermen can provide that information. So I guess the question is there some other way of, or what is the legality code actually do, Dave? I don't think I understand that, and maybe that would help see if that resolves this issue.
Okay. First of all, I've been informed by Karen I should read this into the record, so do that first. The council requests that the VMS requirements in Framework 42 with regard to declaring into a fishery be made consistent with past NMFS practice of using the legacy code unless changing fishery or area. So that makes us official. The legacy code, as I understand it, basically when you send a declaration, it creates a code. You know, I'm in the differential counting area or I'm declared out of the fishery, whatever it is. And that code stays in the system until somebody sends it another code. So if I declare into the differential counting area, I'm declared into that until I send it something else. So the thing defaults to that automatically without having to send another code. Now, as far as the issue of people, you know, miscoding, this isn't going to solve that. All that means is they're going to be miscoded on a daily basis instead of, you know, once in a while. And the way to solve that issue is to go after the people that are miscoding and deal with them, you know, whether it's through fines or sending a Coast Guard cutter out to do a boarding on them or meeting them at the dock. I mean, that was the whole idea of EMS. You always know where we are. That's what everybody keeps telling me. So how hard can it be to find me? And second of all, if, you know, you see a person fishing in the differential counting area and he's declared into Eastern Georges, you know there's a problem. So contact the vessel. Send them an email. I mean, the whole fleet shouldn't be seriously inconvenienced at worst. And as far as small boats are concerned, basically put out of business in the winter because a few people can't punch the right buttons. It's not my problem. And it's not all the honest fishermen's problem. It's a problem for enforcement to deal with those people. I feel really strongly about this, that basically the whole fleet's being punished here because a few people aren't doing it right. And my feeling is we should deal with those people, and we should use a system that has worked for the vast majority of the people.
To follow up, Mr. Chairman, so using this code deals with the issue of cold computer, if you will, because it will be in the system and it will be a default, and you are stuck with it until you change it.
That's correct. What we do now is we send a code. Like if I'm going to change fisheries, say I'm going to go from multi-species to shrimp, I'll send a code during the day when I've heated up my wheelhouse and my computer's warm, and because I got to change gear anyway. And if it takes 4 hours, so be it. I'm in for that day. And then I'll go fishing the next day. I don't need the computer on to fish. The VMS portion of this system is on all the time.
The issues are different across different vendors. With SkyMate, you have a separate computer. With Boat Tracks, the computer is built into the system. Their issue is one of the LEDs apparently won't light when it's cold, so you can't see the screen to send anything. There are different issues across different vendors, but they all revolve around this issue of unheated wheelhouses and computers.
Jim Oblum.
Yeah, I support the motion, and I have to say I think it's not just a cold issue. It's a practical issue. Even on boats with heat, it's if you're going to be fishing in the same area for the whole year, the proper code entries are usually mistakes. And the more times these individuals, it's not an easy thing to get through. There's 12 pages of files you've got to go through to figure out where you want to go and how you want to check off where you want to go. So if somebody's successful in getting it, they're going to fish the same way for several trips in a row, and they're successful in getting it right once, we don't want to have to do it again. There's no need to. And that's the way it had been operating up until just recently, where we have to do it every single time we go out. And it's causing mistakes. It's causing delays. And you get five or six people waiting on a fishing boat for you don't know how long. You have to wait to get your return thing, whether it's right or wrong, or if there's a mistake, you got to do it again. People tend to disappear and get up the dock, or something happens, and you want to get them on the boat and get the heck gone. You know, and it's just the nature of the business. And the less times we have to enter this, the less mistakes you're going to have to deal with.
Sue.
The reason why we sent this permit holder letter out is because of the importance of getting people to declare the correct code. We're looking for a positive confirmation because we're finding that some people were forgetting, and that when OLE would approach them when they saw that the code was different, you know, they were kind of letting them off the hook because people were just saying, well, I forgot, and that's kind of understandable. I also wanted to just point out that we are looking into other options to make this easier, like having come up on the screen where you were fishing last trip and just simply asking the fisherman, is this what you want to do this trip, yes or no? And that would be an email confirmation and not a declaration through the VMS. But what we were looking for was a positive confirmation that, yes, this is indeed what you want to do that trip.
John Nelson.
Yeah, I guess the question to the service is, does this work for you? If somebody's declared in, until they declare out, they're in wherever they're supposed to be fishing, and if they're outside of that, you can nail them.
I think that's what we both just said. No, it's not working, and that's why we sent out the letter. This is what we were doing. It wasn't working. We sent out the letter to actually require people to comply with the requirements, which we should have been doing from the beginning, frankly, but for some reason weren't. And we were finding that we're just, under this system, too many people miscoding. And it has improved since we've changed it.
Rodney?
Yeah, could you give us an idea what you figure is too many people, Ms. Coden?
No, I don't have the numbers.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is not the only part of this problem. I guess is where I'd have to take us at this point. Number one, I don't know where we're going to go if we pass this anyhow. But two, this cuts right across all of the fisheries that are requiring VMS at this time. And I'm not sure that whatever we come up with here underground, you know, the ground fish, so we ain't got to do it again later on. So I'd almost wonder if we should table this to enforcement, because this does come in, although it needs to be highlighted here, it does cut across all the other requirements. I mean, the requirement letter that came out is for all fisheries. And it raises the scallop fishery and quite a few, even the herring industry, fisheries. So I wonder if we'd be better to table this until later on, until the enforcement. You want that in a motion, I suppose. I don't make a motion to table this till enforcement.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Salisbury. All those in favor of tabling the motion, raise your hand. Ten. Opposed? Six. Any abstentions? Motion to table carries 10-6. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to actually carry on John Nelson's questioning to the service and ask, understanding the situation that David Gaethel has brought up and the problems faced by members of the industry, is there another way outside of what has been proposed to try and resolve this?
I think I did try to explain that we were working with OLE to see if we can just simply put up on the screen what the vessel fished the last trip and just ask them, is this what you want to do this trip? Yes. And if it's not a yes, then they have to go in and physically change their VMS code.
Yes, I understand that. I think I'm not sure that really resolves the question of the inability to keep your system up and functioning properly under severe weather conditions, which would be required by the daily declaration into the fishery. And that's the issue that's being brought up here, and not only is it the weather related issue, it's the delay issue. And if somebody is fishing on a single day, I don't think it's fair to say to somebody, we're going to chew up 25% of your day while you're waiting for a response from the system. You know, it something's got to be done, and you know, there's got to be a reasonable way to resolve this.
Mike Leary.
Yeah, one of the benefits of the VMS requirement was it was going to be easier. You weren't doing the IVR and you weren't calling in. In fact, when you did call in, you got a number. You knew what fishery you were in. You knew when you left. You knew when you came back in. You could figure out how much you used. Now you can't do any of that. And most people think that on the bigger boats, you're looking at a computer screen. That may be the case. On some of the smaller boats, it's a laptop that's folded away, that's Velcroed up and taped up so it doesn't fall apart. They look at the screen maybe once a year when they change their code. And it is a function of VMS, but to do this on a daily basis, it's uncalled for. And a lot of people, you know, you send a packet for Framework 42, when I don't know how many pages it was. I read it. A lot of people don't even read it. And you send the daily notice to letter, the intent there. The people that get penalized are the people that read it. And those aren't the people that are not coding correctly. It's the people that don't read all the stuff you get in the mail. And therein lies the problem. So it is another issue coming up under enforcement for the scallops also with the VMS. That's all.
Rodney.
Yeah, I could see this as a big burden on the day boat fishery because they only have a limited time to fish. And they get down and your computer's cold and to get it going. And they got to wait. I can see this is not only a burden, it's an extra cost to them. I can see this working on a trip boat that goes out for 8 or 9 days or 7 days. You code in once and you're that way for the entire trip. But somebody that's going in and out, couldn't you code them in by a week or something like that to make it easier for them? Maybe treat a day boat different than you treat a trip boat. Maybe that might be a relief to some of these fishermen.
Dave Gaethel, then Phil Rule.
Yeah, I mean, I lost the boat. I can't bring it back up. But there's a fundamental misunderstanding here. Sue says we're making it so you can do something on the screen. The screen doesn't come on to do anything. That's the fundamental problem. You're asking people to do something that they cannot do.
The computer does not come on until it warms up. My boat, it's been sitting at home now for 4 days. It's snowing out. If I was to go home and declare into a fishery right now, nothing would happen. I'd push the on button, and the computer would just sit there, and it would make strange noises that come out of the hard drive, and then it would probably just go dead. I can't send you anything when it's cold. It can't be done. And I, you know, if people have suggested bring the computer home, like Rodney said, these computers are tucked away. We're small boats. The computer has to be somewhere where salt can't get at it. It's hardwired. It's not a matter of just pulling a couple plugs out and sticking it in my back pocket. You know, I got to climb into a skiff. I got to row in from my mooring. It's a $1,100, $1,200 piece of equipment that most likely is going to take a swim pretty quick when I start taking it in and out of the boat. I've already got two cell phones at the bottom of Hampton Harbor. I don't know why the computers wouldn't be any different. This is an unacceptable situation for on the order of 900 or 1,000 boats that are on moorings, that are not tied to docks, that have a serious weather-related issue, and it was a simple fix. And I just, for the life of me, do not understand why we can't handle this problem today. I really don't.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Dave. We've got a serious problem with this, and that's why I moved the table before, because this whole discussion we're having, I mean, we've got ground fishing, we've got enforcement, and this cuts across to all of them, so I'm a little confused of where we are here. But what I respect with the service is done with the, you know, thought process of trying to put together something that makes it easier. But, you know, that's pretty complicated because it doesn't really make it easier. One, as Dave said, you can't really get the machine to come up and do this. There's all kinds of issues that are involved in this. You have a lot of outages that we're not even, we've asked for a report for. I don't know where that we're at on that department. But at the end of the day, what the service is suggesting at this point, they're going to send you a message. This is what you want to do. You've got to send it back. The report we got the other day, I think SkyMate, that's probably going to cost you somewhere around $1, and on Boat Tracks, it's going to cost you $2. So instead of $2 for your declaration, we just went to $4 for every day. You know, there's problems here that are a lot bigger than the end of the day. We need to get this thing figured out so it's usable and friendly for all sides that are using it. This, in my mind, if you got 10% are having problems declaring in, you got 90% that don't. And once again, we're going to be regulating the 10%, holding the 90% hostage while you're trying to capture 10%, and that's wrong.
Dave Preble.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't see this as strictly an enforcement issue. I'd like to make a motion we take it off the table and sell it right now.
Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Ten opposed. One, two, three, four, five abstentions. Motion carries 10-5-1. It's back on. It's been laid on the table. Any further discussion? Rodney.
Yeah, I'd like to ask a question of Sue or Pat. I'm not sure which one. Is there a way we can identify and separate the day boat fleet from the day boat fishery from the fleet fishery? And have the fleet fishery declared the way you want it, and have the day boat fishery on an exemption or something like that, where they, as long as they don't change a fishery, they can stay within the same code?
I don't think there's any way to separate out the day boat from day boats from the trip boats, but Sue and I were talking a little bit, and then, you know, there may be some way to do like a quarterly declaration instead of a trip-by-trip declaration. I don't think we could handle something like monthly, frankly. It's there's a disconnect between that kind of declaration and the VMS and the enforcement part of it. So You know, maybe if this is particularly a winter problem, which, you know, frankly, I think we're mixing apples and oranges in here, and it's a moving target. But if this is a particular winter problem, maybe there's some way for the winter months to allow for a single declaration. And, you know, you've got to have a letter or something on board. And if you don't have that on board, then, you know, then you better be able to show that you changed your declaration. Or, I don't know. We'd need to think it through.
Roddy?
How long will it take us to think it through? Because the winter's almost over.
It's not going to happen for this winter because it would require regulatory change.
Dana Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And definitely, I don't have any answers to this and the whole process of reporting and the technology and the electronics are supposed to make things easy. I'm a little concerned. It's a rail issue, and I know it's a rail issue, and even though this may not be the answer, I'm concerned that the sort of the impression I'm getting that the service is sort of blowing off these people's comments here, saying, hey, there's nothing we can do about it. I think that trying to be critical in a kind way, I really think you need to work with these people. There are a lot of boats out there that rely on this. The seasonal issue evidently doesn't work. It's okay if you're only in one fishery, but I would just hope that we could work together here and do something to... It's got to be a problem for the service collecting the data if the system is jammed up with bad data. And I don't have the answers, but I there's some animosity here between the service and user groups, and I don't think that's the way we should go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Nelson.
Thanks for the degree. To a degree. I'm hearing Pat say that there may be ways to address this. It sounds to me like the service is going to put a good faith effort to try to address something that probably is a seasonal issue. Maybe there's some other refinements that could be done, too. So I'm comfortable with moving ahead with that approach. I guess I would just want to make sure that the council's offering to Pat and the service resources to assist as far as, you know, guinea pigs to practice on or whatever else, and I'm sure some of the members here would be happy to be guinea pigs. Obviously, I don't have a VMS, so I'm willing to volunteer these people. But seriously, it seems to me that having the opportunity to work with some of the industry like Dave to work out some of those kinks is something that I would suspect the service would welcome, and I suspect the industry would also welcome that. So if that's the sense of the motion, then I would move the question, Mr. Chairman.
I think what this motion says is go back to doing it the way we used to do it, and it doesn't necessarily leave open the opportunity to do what it is you just described, which is to try to troubleshoot the situation, come up with alternatives or solutions that address the issues that have been raised.
Then I think maybe the point would be that if the maker of the motion is comfortable that the service is making a commitment based on what I've suggested as far as feedback and working with it, then the motion may not be necessary. So I would ask Dave if he's comfortable getting that type of interaction with the service and working with them to see if they can resolve that. Obviously, winter is almost over, although I guess if you went up a little north, we probably wouldn't recognize that that's the case. But, you know, maybe let's just have the parties work together and see if that can be resolved. If it can't, it can be brought back to the council well before winter to have us address it again.
I think an alternative way of doing it would be to vote this motion up, which would revert us to the system that we had that worked. And then if there's an alternative system brought forward,
we could examine that. That to me would be better, because then we solve the problem immediately. We go back to using the legacy code, and then if, you know, we want to go on a seasonal basis to a call-in system for the winter months or, you know, whatever is ultimately decided, we'll have the time to have that discussion over the next two or three council meetings to have something in place as soon as possible. I suspect we'll have something back to us real quick if we vote this motion up.
I'd be careful in characterizing this motion as fixing the problem. I don't think that because the council decides that this is what we want to do, that that's what the service is going to do.
Well, it does fix the problem. I mean, it you know,
if they choose to implement it. I think that's what I'm trying to get across, is that we can send this letter and say, we've decided that you need to go back to the way you did business before. And they can just say no, but thanks. Or we can ask them to consider going back to the existing or the previous system, and let's work on solutions in the meantime. I mean, there's different ways to get at what it is you're trying to get at. I don't think this is the only solution. And I think it's dangerous to telegraph or in any way expect that you're going to get the result you're looking for by getting a positive vote on this motion. That's my read.
Yeah, I understand that. But my question is, you know, when I go home tonight, and you know, I don't want to go fishing tomorrow, but say I did, this problem isn't solved. I can't start the computer to send them a code to tell them I'm already out of the fishery because I'm going to go shrimping.
Right.
You know, we need a solution last April 1st, not, you know, in the future sometime. This has been an ongoing problem now since April 1st.
No. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I heard the RA right, this is a regulation that really it wasn't being adhered to because oversight or whatever. So, I mean, I understand what Dave's saying, but I'm getting a little leery of where we're going here, because now that it is a regulation, so it takes a regulatory change. And how are we going to accomplish that is what's really got me buffaloed here. Is this going to take a council action, take the regulatory change, and if it is, then how are we doing that? Or are we requesting the service to do it, and does the service have the authority to do that? You know, I mean, I'm a little concerned with the whole process system here of changing rules. I mean, I think there's some kind of structure we have, or I assume we have, for doing this, and we can't just say, change this, change that. I'm a little concerned of where we're going here.
Well, I think there's different ways to arrive at the place that I think we've identified, which is some sort of system in place that gets at what the service believes is necessary and what the regulations require, while at the same time being user-friendly and dealing with some of the limitations of the small boat fisheries. My community as well is impacted by this regulation change. I can't tell you how many people came into my office telling me that, I won't repeat what they said, but having a serious problem with this. We had similar problems. We all rode dinghies back and forth against a five-knot tide, so we understand, too. But I guess if this is a problem for groundfish, this is a problem for all small boat fisheries, and I think we need to find a way to have a dialogue between the council and the service to come up with a solution or solutions that will get at this issue. Passing this motion, I don't think, is going to change anything between now and the next council meeting. It may send a message, but it may not be the message that we want to send. We may want to broaden the message that we're sending. We may want to expand upon the opportunities that we have in our dialogue with them or in our correspondence. And that's what I am suggesting. Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The
we've got an intolerable situation. The only question is, how do we get there from here? It's not a question of whether we're going to go there or not. We've got to make some change in this. And the question is, how do we get there from here? And I think that that this needs to be answered by NIMS. It's not something that we can settle here right now. We've got to have some kind of kind of guidance. I don't know what they can and can't do here. I don't know what's possible with the system, and that's what we need to determine. And I think we need to move as quickly as possible on this. It's not something we can let go. So I don't know what to do. I would think, though, that by the next council meeting, we ought to have some ideas. We should have some ideas now, beyond just simply this one idea. There's got to be a way of getting there from here. Thank you.
And I guess what I've been suggesting is that perhaps we could broaden this motion to get us to that point, so that in June, when we sit back down as a body, we have at least one back and forth correspondence with the regional office, if not other meetings that can take place. You know, I myself can go to the regional office and try to work on this myself, you know, in my capacity, or we can do something here. But just sending a letter saying put it back to the way it was doesn't guarantee we're going to get that kind of dialogue. John Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I concur with your approach. I would suggest that a very friendly amendment is that the council request the service evaluate VMS requirements, period. Before I stick the period in, I should have just said, and determine if other processes would be more effective than current practices. That's suggested as a friendly amendment.
I'm not sure what to do here, quite frankly. I mean, I'm willing to withdraw the motion if I get some assurance that something's going to happen here. What I want to know is, how am I going to deal with the 50 people that have been calling my house every day since March 7th wanting a fix to this problem?
Yeah.
I mean, this may not be the solution. Like I said, at the chairman's discretion, if he thinks that withdrawing the motion is the best way to get there from here, I'm willing to do it. But I want some kind of assurance that we're actually going to do something here.
I understand. Let me suggest that there's a way to blend the two elements that are on the board into one motion. I don't think there's anything wrong with requesting that as quickly as possible the service go back to the legacy code style of doing things and commit to coming up with alternatives or solutions that, you know, meet their interpretation of the regs and requirements. That become more user-friendly. And if they're not going to implement the legacy code, still commit to coming up with alternatives. I think you can kind of have it both ways, just a matter of blending the two elements together. So it's a please go back to the way it was, and we'll sit down and figure out what we can do. And if that doesn't work, let's just sit down and figure out what we can do. I think it's possible to word the motion in that way.
Okay,
I'm not telling you it's a bad idea. I'm telling you that we shouldn't just stop it. Do it this way.
Right. So, I mean, the actual question at the moment is, should I accept this as a friendly? And I guess I should. So, you know, I'll accept that as a friendly if that is helping to get us to where we need to be. If not, then somebody else suggest some language.
Thanks. I would just add in what John has suggested then, determine if other processes such as the legacy code would be more effective than current practices. So that gives you a broad approach to evaluate. The service has a wide range of options available to them, some of which could be immediate, some of which would be maybe further afield.
Rodney, then Mike.
Yeah, I agree, and I think David's in a bad situation right now, and he ain't going to get out of it this year. But my concern is that this actually, you know, we have to do something about this. We have to work with the service and try to correct this, because this is actually going to reinforce all the skepticism we had about the VMS. The people who are out there said they're just going to use it for an ankle bracelet. This situation, if we don't try to correct it, is going to enforce that feeling, and they're going to have no trust in the system at all. I mean, I think we do need the VMS. I think it's a good tool, but it has to, I think we need to work cooperatively with the service, the council, and the fishermen, because I just thought the exemption letter was a good idea until I talked to Phil. And he says he can't sign the bottom of the letter, so it doesn't work. But we've just found out a system that is not working. It might be working fine for the enforcement. It's probably the best tool they had. But it doesn't work for the fishermen out on the ocean. And we need to have a system that's going to work for both parties to make it work and have confidence in it. So whatever we can do to make that happen, I'm all for it. Thank you.
Mike.
I'd like to add, if it's all right with John, after our process is the IVR, which is still up and running, if that could be looked at also. And another comment, too, is, you know, if you don't have a computer screen running on these boats, a lot of boats don't, you can send me 100 nasty emails an hour. I'm not going to ever get them. You know, and a large portion of this is either you're going to have to send a certified letter to these people saying, A, you're not coding correctly, you're not coding daily, or they're never going to get the message. A large portion of the fleet is not doing it on a daily. The lobster boats that all went April 1st, they don't even have a computer screen. So, you know, they don't know about the regulations, and they're not doing it on a daily basis. And I don't know how, you know, I go every day, I code correctly, and I get the acknowledgments. These people, you send them all the emails you want, they're not going to get them. Thanks.
What was the suggested? Whereabouts? Is that right?
And or.
Okay. Thank you.
Dave Preble.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The word effective, I don't think, does it there. I think we want more usable or user-friendly. I don't think effective implies something different than we want to say here. Usable, I think, is probably the best word, unless somebody comes up with a better one.
Practical.
Yeah, practical. Practical would work, too.
Okay, we have a finely massaged and worked over motion. Pat.
Yeah. Well, we are more than happy to work with people to try to find a solution that works for both of us. Going back to legacy code, though, just so you know, it's not an option because it would require a regulatory change. I mean, it's not an option in the short term. It's not an option for next week. And all of these things would probably require regulatory changes. And so I just say that I hope that the next time we say something's not working for us, that you're willing to work with us as well.
Okay, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. One abstention. Motion carries 16-0, one abstention. Okay. Anything else under ground fish rip? No?
Not until skates.
Okay. How long's... Okay. Well, we're about a half an hour early, but is anyone in the audience for public comment? Vito?